knows cycles. As a real estate professional in the Pacific Northwest, David saw the way the U.S. real estate market was headed and started looking for a new market and some fresh perspectives. His research took him to what at the time seemed an unlikely destination, Uruguay. But the more time he spent there, the more he liked it, and not just from a professional point of view. David now makes his home in Uruguay and helps International Living readers and subscribers keep up with that beautiful little country as our Uruguay correspondent. We catch up with David and ask him about his new life in Uruguay on this edition of Finding Your Overseas Paradise. David Hammond, thank you so much for joining me today. Where am I talking to you at right now? Tell the listeners where you are, what's going on around you.
This morning, I'm in Montevideo, and it's winter here, so it's a cool day, but it's got a blue sky, a few puffy white clouds, and it's a beautiful day here.
And you're in Montevideo because you're International Living's correspondent in Uruguay. Congratulations. That's a nice position to be in.
Yes, thank you.
Let's start out with a little bit of your background, David. What were you doing before you decided to move offshore, and what made that decision for you?
I got interested first in offshore real estate. That was my first interest. I was in real estate in the U.S. in Washington State, and I noticed that real estate was cyclical, so I started noticing that the cycles were different places, and I saw that that learning about international real estate could be a good opportunity, and I started investigating different places that might be good. I took several classes and got some certifications in international real estate, and then so I knew what things to look for, and I started looking for countries that might be promising to be involved with. And that's how I came to Uruguay. I hadn't heard of Uruguay before, but everything kept checking out so well. And I came here to look at the real estate opportunities and was very impressed with those. But, in addition to finding good, investment opportunities, I fell in love with the culture and the people of Uruguay. So, I found myself thinking more about Uruguay and, wishing I could be here. So I made changes in my life and simplified things so that I could come and live here. And I've been here for about over 5 years, almost 6 years now.
So this all happened back in like 2007, right?
2005, I started, doing my exploration. Uh-huh. I came to Uruguay and moved to Uruguay actually in 2006.
I like the simplification idea. Talk about that a little bit, because a lot of International Living readers and subscribers are interested in this simplification idea, just getting their lives in order, shaking out the junk, and getting down to what's real. How did that work for you? What was that process like for you?
Well, it's happened in different stages. I guess that, the older you get, it's like our tails get longer and longer. We have more experiences, mm-hmm. more things, more stuff, And I ended up, I had a house full of things, a garage full of things. I had other, rental houses and all this stuff. And I ended up feeling like I was starting to be a slave to my things and my lifestyle that weren't really, essential responsibilities. They were just things that I accumulated. So I started trying to be more conscious and decide what really gives me enjoyment in life, what's really important to me. And then trying to focus on what I wanted in life, and then tried to clear away everything else that was clutter. One thing that I heard that was very helpful to me, it was an image. I think I saw it on a movie, but there was a doctor, and he treated people who got cancer or got terminal diseases. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they would have like 6 months to live or a year to live or 2 years to live. And he said for those people that as soon as they got that diagnosis, that everything got crystal clear. Instead of life being a jumble, they could see instantly what was important, what was meaningful to them, and what was just, stuff they were doing for other people or, doing to keep up with the Joneses and things. And that made it real clear. So I kind of use that as a mental exercise. If I had 1 year to live, what would I do? What would be important to me and what would not be important to me? So that's something that I kind of do periodically when I start to get, you know, what do I really want? I kind of use that mental exercise, and for me personally, that's helpful.
Wow, that is a good clarifying exercise, Dave. That's really neat. Let's talk about Uruguay then, the place where you ended up after doing your research. I want to talk to you a little bit more about the real estate situation there, but first, what is it about the country aside from the real estate opportunities that attracts you, and where have you been there so far? What's kind of your favorite place? What's your overall take of Uruguay?
My favorite place is Punta del Este, and I live between Punta del Este and Montevideo. And Punta del Este is almost like a different place than the rest of the country, Uruguay. It's very, very clean, very nice, just very, I want to say first world, that's kind of a cliche, but it's a very pleasant place to be. It's very safe. There's very good service. The people there are very service oriented. It's very, people come from all over the world to vacation there. So all the services to make those people comfortable are already there all the time.
It is a very popular place for people to go from not only neighboring countries of Brazil and Argentina, but from all over the world. You're right. It's a playground
right.
for the world.
Right. And, in January, yes, in January, the airport's full of private jets. For about 3 or 4 years, it was, it kind of became the place where the fashion industry came for New Year's. Tommy Hilfiger was here, Ralph Lauren was here. It was like all the big names were here, so a lot of the modeling agencies were here. There's a lot of, that's kind of one group. There's a lot of groups that come, but there's a lot of people in the fashion industry that come to Punta for New Year's, and people who want to be in the fashion industry come to Punta New Year's.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of industrialists that come from all over the world, and they like privacy. And Punta also protects privacy, so political figures from different countries come to Punta because they can have a nice time and they haven't had to worry about, too much
the paparazzi,
political froth going on around them. Yeah,
yeah, and that anchors the north end of that beautiful section of Uruguay coast, and Montevideo anchors the southern end of that section, which is where you are now. And Montevideo is a beautiful city, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Montevideo is a great city. There's lots of things to do here. It's small as far as cities. It's 1.4 million people, but I really like the feeling of it. It's like almost like a big small town, but everything's here.
And how did you fit in with the community there, David? Did you find expats with the same kind of thing in mind that you had? Was it easy to find like-minded folks there, or were you blazing your own trail?
Well, at first I was blazing my own trail. Things have changed a lot. In 2006, I remember there was four or five other people that spoke English that were all in Punta at the same time.
Yeah.
And we met for lunch. And we said, gee, we ought to start a meeting where English speakers could get together. And we were going to call it the Shakespeare Club because none of us were from the same country. We just happened to all speak English, and we thought it would be fun to do.
Uh-huh.
And that was in 2006. Now, there are frequently there'll be like 60, 80, 100 people at the English-speaking group in Punta del Este. You know, 50, 60 people at an English-speaking group in Montevideo. So since the time I was here, I was kind of a pioneer for the North Americans coming. But now there's a lot of North Americans coming, and there's a very established, very warm English-speaking community, and some of them are from North America that are retired or have could work online. Some of the people are Uruguayans who've lived abroad for 23 years and returning. And there's English speakers from Germany, South Africa, the Netherlands that all speak English, and it's fun to get together and trade experiences in English. So it's really a great group.
And aside from just the beauty of Uruguay itself, there's a reason that all those expats are going there. And we've kind of called it the most American country you can find outside of the United States, because that service level is so high. And it's not the cheapest place in South America to be as well. Do you notice that, the balance between the level of services and affordability? How would you compare the affordability of Uruguay to other places in South America?
Well, it depends on how you live. One of the things that I would caution people about that are coming is that it's not going to be like living in the United States in a different country.
Uh-huh.
not economically and not culturally. It's a different places have different language, but they also have different cultures and different economies. So there's different values on things. So if you took your U.S. life in Texas, and you've got two big cars, and you've got the big garage and the 2,400 square foot house, and you transported that lifestyle, you know, to Uruguay, it would probably cost more to live in Uruguay than in the U.S. Mm-hmm. If you just transpose that same lifestyle, but you adapt to the culture and the way things are here. Transportation costs are high here, but 80% of the people in Uruguay do not have cars, and you don't need a car here. Right. You know, unless you need a truck to carry something. You know, I would rent one, but you don't need to have a car, so that cuts a lot of expense off. You can, you know, there's places that are very expensive to eat, but there's also places that are affordable to eat. So I changed my lifestyle. Part of my simplification process was learning how the locals live and then adapting to that. And that actually added to my personal experience of living here so that I'm living something different. I'm learning about something different and seeing life a different way. Both culturally and economically.
And that's absolutely true. We hear it over and over and over again from expats who have done what you have done, and they say it actually improves their quality of life to do that simplification, to learn another culture, to settle in like that. And Uruguay is a beautiful and natural place for that to happen. Let's talk a little bit about the real estate situation there, because that's what you specialized in before you got there. Uruguayan real estate is what actually attracted you to go down there. What was the market like then, and how has it changed in the time that you've been there?
The market, I came in 2006, and that was a time that people were just wondering if there was going to be problems in the U.S. I wasn't concerned about that. I didn't come because of any real estate troubles there. I came just because I thought it was attractive. The things that are good about it, that if you study different countries, is they call in real estate, they call it like the bundle of rights. What bundle of rights do you get with a property? You know, the right to the land, the right to, you know, uninterrupted use, and there's a whole group of things that people take for granted that you don't get everywhere.
Yeah.
But the bundle of rights you get with property in Uruguay was very good. The property registration system was very good. The protection of private property rights was very good. The laws getting the, you know, if you buy a property, like in some countries, if you buy a property, it can be as difficult to get the seller out as it is to get a tenant out in California. So,
right.
So there's a lot of things that I looked at, and Uruguay, shown as one of the best places for investing as far as the rule of law and the property rights and, you know, all those things that you may not see, you know, I looked at closely, and they're good here. You don't have to, a foreigner can buy property with the same rights and protections in Uruguay as a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
That's very rare. You don't have to get a tax ID number to buy property in Uruguay. You don't have to pay any penalty fee for bringing investment capital in or taking capital out. You can move money in and out of the country, you know, fairly freely. It's getting more complicated everywhere in the world to do that.
It is.
But it's the least troublesome of just about anywhere. So that's it has a good foundation here for that. The market has gone up. Punta del Este, the market has gone up tremendously since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And prices, farmland's gone up 500-600%.
Wow.
2 years ago, I thought, oh my gosh, things have gotten so high. But I've been doing that my whole life. In fact, my daughter teases me about that. You know, prices are going up. Oh my gosh, you know. So I guess that's just part of getting older. But things are going up. There's some areas that I think that are still a good buy, and some areas that I would buy if I wanted to own a property there, but I wouldn't buy purely for speculation.
Right.
Who's buying in Uruguay now, like I'm cautious, but on a very large scale, endowments, hedge funds, and big companies are still actively investing property in Uruguay. And the big entities that are buying here, they're buying for diversification and for long term.
Uh-huh.
So I think that Uruguay still makes sense for long term and for diversification, and you know, and choose your investments carefully in the country. And I think there's still opportunity there. The days of you know, and maybe you still could. I can't predict the future, but I would be very cautious about thinking you could buy a property, then, you know, flip it in a year and, you know, make 30% of your money. I wouldn't try that kind of speculation. But if I wanted like to live in Montevideo, I would buy an apartment, you know, instead of renting. If I plan to be here for 5 years, 10 years, I think buying still makes a lot of sense.
Because there still is a good story for buying that kind of property in the right place. And you mentioned the agricultural investment that larger investors and even individuals are doing.
Yes.
It's because that Uruguayan farmland is so rich and productive. There's a big story there. It's kind of the breadbasket of that region, isn't it?
It's one, yeah, there's big agriculture areas in Uruguay and Argentina and Brazil, but Uruguay probably 75, I bet 80% of the landmass is agricultural land. It's
yeah.
like people have described it as San Tropez next to Iowa. You've got Punta del Este, which is like a, you know, a world-class resort next to land that looks like the Iowa. You know, it's beautiful farmland, and if you're just looking at it visually, the only difference is the parrots and occasional palm trees. But it's there's grazing land, lots of cattle, lots of sheep, you know, they grow all kinds of crops here. It's like California, that you can grow just about everything here. They mm-hmm. grow citrus here, avocados here, they grow grains here. If you drop the seed, get out of the way, you know, because it's going to grow. So yeah, it's also got. The second largest aquifer in the world is underneath the northern part of the country. So it's a food production country. Most of the country, it's to produce food, and it's got its own supply of, you know, water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very secure that way. People are worried about food security or, you know, fresh water, those kind of things. Uruguay has got a very small population with a lot of food production and a lot of water.
A natural choice for people who are concerned about that. I imagine that obviously most of the expats that you know take a look at that beautiful section of coast between Montevideo and Punta del Este first. Do you know anybody who's living up country in some of that beautiful farmland up there or up the river in Colonia or even farther up there?
I have friends that have bought small farms, mostly inland of Atlantida.
Mm-hmm.
There's an area that has good farmland, and it's they're buying small farms. They're buying like, you know, 10 hectares, 25 acres, things like that around Atlantida. That's a very popular area where expats are buying. Another very popular area for expats to buy rural land is near a town called Pueblo Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Inland is about 30 minutes inland of Punta del Este. And there's a lot of Europeans and a lot of North Americans are buying in that area. And those areas are popular because you're 30 minutes from, or, you know, 20, 30 minutes from, you know, shopping stores, movie theaters, dry cleaners, things like that. So you can kind of have the best of both worlds, live in the country, but you're just 20, 30 minutes from all the conveniences of town. I know people that have bought in Rocha, but they don't live on their property. It's like they'll have it managed. They'll have you know, managers watch the cows and things. Because for most people, Rocha is still a little bit isolated. You know, Rocha is between Punta del Este and Brazil. It's Rocha is an amazing place. A lot of people are investing there. A lot of funds are investing there. If you look at the east coast of South America, you've got the very populated Brazil, mm-hmm. they're very populated Argentina, Uruguay, and you've got this big gap of pristine, beautiful Atlantic coastline with white sand beaches, blue water, and that's the Department of Rocha. So it's a gap that's going to fill in. So I think that a lot of those big entities that are buying land, they're buying in Rocha because they see that as, you know, in 10, 15 years, that's going to fill in and that's going to be a very good investment. But for right now, for like you know, living there, it's the most beautiful place. It's my favorite place to go explore. But it's still kind of don't have the amenities for people who want to live there.
Yeah. That was my next question. Where do you see the market going? Where is the development happening? And if somebody wanted to get out in front of the path of progress in Uruguay, would Rocha be the place they would look, or is there someplace else that's gonna boom as well?
The areas that I would say to look are And I'm warning, I don't have a crystal ball. This is just, you know,
right.
This is a guess. I think that the areas that are peripheral to the most popular areas might be good places to look. One area that I would look at is the area called Minas. There's a town called Minas that is about 40-minute drive from Punta del Este, and there's a bus that goes five times a day between Minas and Punta del Este.
So it's
beautiful agricultural, and it's got a beautiful town square. It's a small place, and the countryside around there is some of the most beautiful in Uruguay. So there's a highway in that land about Pueblo Eden. I talked about that's on the way to Minas, and that land is going up. So there seems to be a path of gentrification going up Punta del Este to Minas. I think small farms are still a good value if you shop around for them. Close to an urban center is nice because people seem to like to have that proximity. And then Roche is good, but do your research. You can't just buy anything there. You need to study, you know, what's happening and get to know the area. And I think there's still a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah. If people want to go there and get their boots on the ground and stay for a while, where would you recommend that? Of course, we always recommend that if you really want to do a good research job on a place, rent there as long as you can. Are there rental opportunities available along that stretch of coast? Are there places that would be logical for people to base themselves and explore the rest of the country from?
Well, I would say, let me go back a little bit. Also, the area between the Costa del Oro that you cover in your great webinar, that's another area where people might want to look at because the prices are lower and they'll probably be coming up there too. The two main places to stay are Montevideo and Punta del Este.
Yeah.
Montevideo, the way that I recommend, there's two ways that I see people be very happy the way they've started their exploration here. One is there's some great Spanish language schools in Montevideo. You can call them up. And if you're coming by yourself, they'll help find you an apartment. So you land on the ground. Somebody's expecting you. They help you find an apartment, or you can even stay in one of their dorms for a few days, or they'll set you up an apartment for your first week or two. So when you first land, there's people expecting you. You're learning some of the language. You've got a place to stay, and you have people to ask questions if you have a problem.
So a great way to do it.
For people who have no other connections here, that's really a nice way to get started, I think. Another thing is to rent a short-term apartment, like rent one for like 3 weeks or a month in Montevideo, just to kind of learn the neighborhoods and get your feet on the ground here. And then Punta del Este, of course, is another area. And the off-season is a good time to explore. You see what Uruguay's like in the winter, so you're not surprised. And it's very quiet. It's a good time to shop for property. You can usually get the best deals in. And you can also get an apartment in Punta del Este during the off-season for a very low price, too. Most of the properties are vacation rentals, and finding someone who wants to rent for a week or two is usually no problem at all.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the off-season, and of course, Uruguay does have seasons. They're exactly the opposite of the seasons up north in the U.S. because you're south of the equator there. But how cold does it get? That's a question that a lot of people ask us. What is winter like in Uruguay?
Yeah. Well, I've read climate data that compares it to Long Beach, California, or somewhere in Carolina, but it's different. It's it doesn't get real cold. Freezing temperatures are very rare. Twice in the 6 years I've been here, there's been frost on the ground where the grass is a little white, and everybody goes out and takes a picture of it. So that's the coldest it gets, you know, But it tends to have a lot of days like in the 40s and 50s, but sometimes there is humidity in the air, and that humidity can make it feel a little bit cooler. So it does get cold. People heat usually for, 3 or 4 months out of the year. You'll use heat part of the day. So it's not tropical, but subtropical. And it does get cool, but you don't have snow and you don't have freezing temperatures.
So bring your sweater and your jacket when you come down to explore Uruguay. David, you were a tremendous help when we put together our webinar on Uruguay. You know the lay of the land down there. You're our correspondent down there now, so it's your job to go out and check things out and report back to us and our readers and subscribers about what's going on down there.
Yes.
What is in store for you in the next couple of years? I know that you're comfortable down there. I know that you're happy. But personally, what are your plans? Are you going to try to expand in Uruguay, explore more of South America? What personally does David Hammond have on his plate?
Oh, I don't know if I've talked about out loud about this before, but I do think about it. two things that I want to do, actually three things that I think about. One is I do want to explore more areas around South America. There's a lot of places that are close by that I haven't been to. I hear about a great little place in Chile. I haven't been to Iguazu Falls yet. You know, southern Brazil is nice. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like to get to know some of the neighboring areas, take some short trips to explore those is one thing. The second thing is I really want to expand. When I first came, I tended to make friends with more Uruguayans, mm-hmm. and once in a while would see an expat. And the expat community has been so comfortable, it's easy I want to spend a larger percentage of my time getting back into with local groups, local clubs, local friends, and you know, maintain those strong expat connections that I have. But it takes a little bit of discipline because we all tend to do what's easy, and it's easy to talk to people who speak your language, to understand your culture. But when it was harder at the beginning, I have good memories from that of the struggling with the language and struggling with the culture differences. But that's when I really felt alive and really really grew. So I wanted to add more of that in my life. And then the third thing that I want to do is I want to explore more. I don't know if I want to move to a more rural lifestyle, but I want to kind of explore that. That's mm-hmm. something I got interested in, is food production and self-reliance is a topic that's kind of starting to draw my interest in articles here and there. So those are the three things that I'm kind of looking at for the future.
Brilliant. It sounds great. It sounds like you've got it planned out. It's been a pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you so much. And we will look for your byline in International Living Postcards coming up, in the magazine coming up. You're a valuable resource there in Uruguay, and I urge all our listeners and subscribers to keep their eyes open for Dave Hammond's byline. He's our man on the ground there in Uruguay, and he's doing a great job. Dave, thank you for being with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I'm very glad to be a part of your team. And I'll tell your listeners that when I met your group here making the webinar, you're a very conscientious, very hardworking group, and I'm very proud to be a part of your company. So thank you for having me, Dan.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Have a good day. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Sign up for International Living's free daily postcards at internationalliving.com/radio and get a free report on the world's top retirement havens. These free daily postcards will give you more information on living the good life for less overseas. Thanks for listening to International Living Radio. You can hear more episodes of Finding Your Overseas Paradise at internationalliving.com/radio.